Okay, interviewer's name, Kenny Osborne. And interviewee's name is Joe Malia. And today's date is April 2nd, 2005. Okay. What was your life like before the war?
Well, I actually had been just more or less a student in living in Butte, Montana. And I had I was a junior in at Butte High School. And I was playing football and happened to get injured and kind of felt that I didn't know whether I wanted to finish school if I couldn't play football. So I along with six other of my buddies, we were all juniors, we all quit and decided to enlist in the Navy. So they had to hold me up a week from the others because my dad was still debating whether he'd let me go or not. And he finally approved and said, I was able to go, but I was a week behind all my friends. But they split us all up anyway. I used to get to see them once in a while at boot camp. But after that boot camp, I went with them back to Farragut, and then we were dispersed to all over the world. So.
Where were you at school?
It's Butte High School.
What was your family's livelihood?
Well, my dad was he was a what they call a pump man at the Anaconda Company in the mine, and that was mainly what he had ended up doing. He had been at one time in politics and was the county assessor of Silverbow County in Butte, and then after that he went back to the mines. He started out working for the Anaconda Company when he was 14 years old, and he got up to be, he was mainly a timekeeper later, and before he got into politics, and then when he came back, he went into being a pump man.
All right, and I think you already answered this, but were you single, married, or children? You're just single, right?
Yeah, I've been single.
Did you have any political leanings before the war, and what were they? How did they compare to the rest of your families?
Well, we were actually political leaning, we were all Democrats. My dad had been was always a Democrat, and being a product of the Depression and living through that we felt that when Roosevelt came in, that kind of changed our lives and made things better for us. And so we were then Democrats, as I still am. So.
What were your greatest daily concerns prior to the war?
Well, I was pretty well concentrated on school. I did a lot of boxing when I was at that age. And I was pretty focused on that. And I guess at that time, I had thought about, maybe that would be where I would end up as a boxer. But I won several championships going into the service. I'd won about six different championships from different weights, everyone in a different weight. And then I went in, when I entered the service, I boxed more of it. That was what I was focused on then. And I hadn't even really thought about employment. We didn't talk a lot about careers and that time. We probably sort of set in our mind that we'll go through, graduate, and we'll probably end up going to work in the mines. But after the war started, that pretty much changed, and the GI Bills saved most of us from that.
What was your family's perception regarding military service?
Well, they were very patriotic and believed that, we should do our part. And I had another brother who was already in the Navy, and we worried a lot about him because he was one who never in his career he went in the Navy in 1942 and never had gotten home or had to leave until 1946. He was sent right to the Pacific. He went to boot camp in San Diego, then went to school, become an electrician, mate, and then he sent him right to New Caledonia, and he was down there, and then put on a ship, and the ship never come back to the United States. It was all in the Pacific all the time. So he never, they say he walked out the door to go to San Diego, and he didn't come back for until after the war. It was 1946.
Was there anyone in your family or community who was a veteran of World War I or other conflicts?
No. I did. My grandfather, my father's side, he was in one war was in, I guess it was the Spanish-American War. He was in that.
How did this affect your perceptions of the military, if at all?
Well, at that time, you felt you were patriotic. You griped the same as everybody else did about, the kinds of routine you're in. And you still, we had, I guess, the same feeling as they have now, but that you're doing your part, you should do your part. However, our war was a different kind of war. I was proud. I was proud to have served, and my brother was proud, and my parents were proud that we were in the service, and relieved that neither one of us got hurt.
What were your perceptions of the war and its combatants prior to U.S. entry?
Well, I didn't really, I was only 17, and so I wasn't, I just took the American part. I didn't, I was very, very angry at the German in the way, and the Japanese, and the Italians at that time too, but the war that I was in is different from the war. And then when we entered to help the British and so on, when we entered, and I was really happy that we did, and had some people who lived in our neighborhood who had they were from Finland and from Poland and places like that, and we kind of sided in with them, we're certainly on their side, just because of all the terrible things that were happening to their family, even to a couple of even the Jewish people that we had in Butte. And, so I think we were solid, for the war to defeat the Germans and the Japanese and the Italians.
How do you feel about isolationism?
I don't think we can be isolated. It's a world, and it's a small world. It's not like the big world it used to be, and I don't think we can afford to go on our own on anything. I think that we're all going to be dependent on one another, and every country, no matter what it is going to. We're going to have to bind together to do all the same things if you want a peaceful world. So isolation is silent against it.
Where were you getting your information about world affairs this time?
And this time in the service, or what?
Prior to entry.
Oh, well, just what comes out in the newspaper and the radio. That was all the ways we had to find out what was going on. I used to sell papers. For that. In fact, I sold the extra about the war when it started. When they bombed Pearl Harbor, I sold papers at nights anyway, and on Saturday nights I sold papers. Bulldog Edition. So when the war started, and I can remember going up and get all the extras I could afford to buy, and continue selling them and buy more and so on. Then, so I sold papers that all night long that night.
Did your heritage or ethnicity affect your perceptions of the combatants?
No, not at all.
All right, where were you, what were you doing when you found out that Pearl Harbor had been attacked?
Well, I was home, and I got a phone, I got a phone call from a friend of mine, and it was not to say that the war had started, but he told me to get, let's get going, get some extras, go sell it. So I was at home, and he got me out of bed when I knew, you know, when the war started.
What was your initial response?
Well, I knew some people, you know, I knew some of the guys who were on. In fact, there was one that I'd known was on the Arizona, and he survived. But and then thinking there was another one that was on another aircraft carrier, and I think he got killed, and or he's on another ship, it wasn't an aircraft carrier, but I think he got killed. But I knew those, and it just seemed to hit you right in your home, you know, because they were neighborhood guys. They were older than I was, but they were, we knew them and everybody, you know. Duke's kind of a town that you know, and you know, handle other people's problems, help them with them and things like that. So it was all, it was very sad for those things.
What was your family's response?
Well, I kind of feel, the way I felt was what I got probably from them. And they were very, you know, angry about the war starting, and angry at Hitler and hated the Japanese and so on. And it was, see, and my mother had been being English, you see, she did have a little bit more because of watching what was happening to England and all of the bombings and all of this, the kinds of things that the little kids that they took and had to ship them out and things like that. It was really hard on her. And her area was affected too by the war, the German, and where she lived in England.
What was your community's response?
Well, they were very, very patriotic. In fact, I think Butte, I think it, as far as per capita, had one of the highest enlistments anywhere in the United States thus far. Also, one of the highest casualty rates for per capita in the United States. So they were pretty, very patriotic. I'd say they'd sacrifice, and like, even we didn't have any like the Sullivan brothers, but we had families with as many as four in the service at one time. Even one family I know, the mother, the father, and the three brothers were all in at the same time.
How did you feel about Jeanette Rankin voting against a declaration of war?
Well, at that age, I was listening to adults and what they thought about it, and I think it wasn't very popular in Butte. It wasn't, where I lived, it wasn't very popular. But as I look back, you know, I guess that was the way she believed, so she free country, and I guess that's what, one of the things we fought for, is to believe that.
Why did you enlist, and what were your expectations?
Well, I enlisted in the Navy because, one, I think when I was very young, when I was about 10 years old, I used to always go to Seattle to my grandmother, and I just was crazy about the Navy. And I used to go there. I've been there a few times, and they had Fleet Week. All the ships were in. You used to get to go over and board the ships, and they'd, you know, they'd talk to all the sailors and stuff. And so I think I was instilled to go to the Navy. And at that time, and then when I come up, like, a couple of things, one of my, because my brother was in, I wanted to go in. And so, and some of the guys, my friends, that we, we thought we had a lot of friends who had been in school with us when we from the time we were freshmen, and those were juniors and seniors, and so many of them had gone, and we just sort of thought, let's go, it's time for us to go. And so we just reached, all of us just reached the age that was legal, you know, for 17 years old. Although I think there was one or two or 18 men. But as a group, we had, because I guess because we know so many kids and guys that were in school with us who had already been in, gone into the service, and we'd seen lots of several casualties from those guys, you know, and some that we were close to. I guess that part of it too.
What were your expectations initially?
Oh, when I first went in, I thought, before I really had reached boot camp or anything, I thought it would probably be a career. And then after I was in it for a long time, I couldn't see it as being a career for me. But I didn't dislike it that much. You miss being home. And we didn't have a lot of contact in those days, and, you know, for with your, we couldn't, like the carriers today, I wouldn't mind, if I'd have been on one of those, I'd stayed in, and maybe you're about as safe as you are sitting right here from being hit by anything. And they're wonderful. I've been aboard about five or six of them, and what I thought that I'd maybe put a, be a career man, and then just the being away for so long, and I missed a lot of living, you know, missed your high school, the end of your high school and things like that. You never got a graduation, never been to a prom, never done all those kind of things as a kid. And I used to get these papers from home and just reading about, you know, what was going on in town. Used to get a paper about it once every 3 months or so, and read about it and things like that. But it was those kind of changed my mind. I would have probably gone back in if I hadn't, if the GI Bill hadn't come along. I probably would have gone back in, because I was looking around saying, "Hey, like just like everybody else, we come home to unemployment. We were." On the 5220 Club, which was, we were given $52, $20 a week for 52 weeks. That was from the government. And that was until we got employed. But there wasn't much going on. Mines were kind of slowing down. There wasn't a lot of work there. And there wasn't a lot of work everywhere because those shipyards were laying off and everything else. So, coming home to that, I kind of lost my train of thought there.
Oh, it was just, the question was, what were your expectations before you went in?
Well, I could say it would probably be a career, and after I was in, the story I told wasn't ready to sign over, I'd say.
Where did you do your basic training, and for how long?
My basic training was down in Farragut, Idaho, which was a brand new naval training station. They only had three in the United States. They had one in Great Lakes, one in San Diego, and then they built one at Farragut, Idaho. And that was selected by Eleanor Roosevelt, was flying over and she's into Lake Pend'Oreille, and she saw the lake. It'd be a wonderful place to put a Navy base. And so we had one. But it didn't last. They closed it in, as I understand. I went through there in 43, and I think it closed in the end of 44. I think it was from 42 to 43. It closed before the war. Before the war was over, they continued to start shipping back to San Diego. And then, from boot camp at Farragut, I was sent to Astoria, sent to Bremerton, Washington, Naval Yard there. And there's where I was assigned to the Marcus Island, the ship that I commissioned and decommissioned it.
How long from the time you entered boot camp, from the time you were assigned to the Marcus Island, how long was that?
Well, it really was within, after I got out of boot camp, from the time I was in boot camp, or when I got out of boot camp, was supposed to be 10 weeks long. And then after that, you had to leave with a 10-day leave, which you were able to go home. And when you come back, you were put in a unit, they call it OGU, is outgoing unit. And generally, my experience was kind of different, because living in Butte, and all the guys who'd gone in the Navy were Farragut, were all home, not in their leave, but sometimes that they were there waiting and were never called, they were never sent anywhere. In school, they couldn't find an opening in school, or they didn't need them somewhere. So they'd come home on 48-hour leaves, so 48 hours passes. And so you see them a lot. You see them, you know, every other week. And so when I got there back to after my leave, and I got back to Farragut, and there was a whole slug of guys I knew over there, and they said, might as well make yourself comfortable, you're going to be here for quite a while. So the very next day, they put me on mess cooking, and then the mess cooking line, they come down and got me and put me on the draft. And so I went to Bremerton, and I was assigned to, next day I was assigned to the Marcus Island. But see, it wasn't built yet, it wasn't completed. So what we did is just joined the ship's company and did a lot of drilling and lecturing and things like that until we sent to the ship.
Was boot camp and all your training, was it what you expected?
Well, it didn't give you much as far as what it's going to be like at sea. You didn't really have a lot of things. They taught you, you know, you learned more about, you know, about guns and the, you know, 20mm and 40mm and 5-inch guns. You learned a lot about those. You did some of the seaman stuff, because see, this is a new Navy, and they were getting away from the things you used to have to know, which was you had to really know a lot about sailing and about safety and all that stuff, and seamanship. It was all seamanship. And so we got into knot tying and all that kind of nomenclature, learning all of the words, your new language that you're speaking, you know, as far as where a stairway was not a stairway, it was a ladder, and a rope was not a rope, it was a line, and on about the whole new language that you learned. So they got you into that, and he briefly gave you some training in, well, signalmen, like semaphore, stuff like that, and then also rifle range and stuff, things like that. You got all that. But as far as really, you know, really planning for your first cruise was there wasn't much in there they could tell you about it, except go on it and you'll find out. You know.
Were you kept informed of world affairs during basic training?
Not really. I can't remember even knowing anything that was going on as far as war during basic training. You weren't allowed, you know, you didn't have newspapers or anything like that. Didn't have radio. So it was, and when you went to the mess hall, it would be the only place you'd be able to hear anything like that. That there was no radio or anything like that. So we didn't know really. If there was an emergency, or they might, if the guy that was in charge of you, he's a chief petty officer, he was responsible for you. He might give you a little brief the next day when they muster you and say, well, yesterday we kicked ass at so-and-so, and, you know, and so on. So, you know, to give a pep talk, things like that. But that was about all, no details.
How was military life different for you than civilian life?
Well, it was not usually, you know, being that regimented. It was very regimented as far as, you know. My first experience with it was, I didn't think I was going to like it at all. By just being, you learned that, you know, you were not an authority, that you had to listen to those guys with stripes on them and gold braid, and they are the ones. In fact, I was told the second day I was there to answer a question. When I answered a question, somebody gave me some shaving lotion. I didn't even shave, and I guess he was wondering what am I doing with shaving lotion. And he said, where'd you get the shaving? He said, I was going to answer him. He said, you don't talk to me. Okay, so you never had any, you were at their mercy, I'll tell you that. They you could get so you could, you know, build up a little bit of resistance against them, a little hatred for them. But some of them were a little bit more diplomatic, but a lot of them were just power struggle, yeah. And they were over you, and you're going to listen.
What do you remember most about basic training?
Well, nothing that was going to make me a better sailor or anything. I enjoyed the work off the weir where I was. I enjoyed the free time or go over and fish at the Lake Pend Oreille, and we'd get boats and, you know, row boats and do that stuff. That was about the what I looked forward to with that time. And then I can't, you know, as far as it was all marching, really, the march and march and march. And you were using dummy rifles all the time, and you didn't, you know, just playing cops and robbers or something, you know. You were carrying those around. And, you know, most of the guys that we had training us were not really Navy men either. They were drafted, and most of them, like lots of coaches who got a specialist, if they got a rank, the rank was specialist A, which is athletic. And they were, because they were teachers, and they had, they knew how to, you know, drill people as far as like just like a coach taking you on and getting you ready for football. They knew what to do, and they put you through the calisthenics all the time, and then they put you through the marching and all this. And that was pretty much, they couldn't, half them couldn't tie the knots. They were trying to get you to tie, you know. And so you'd have to find somebody that they'd share some of the good who had been good Boy Scouts or something to teach us the knot tying and stuff like that. And then the rest of it was, the recreation was pretty good. I enjoyed the basketball and the boxing and stuff. We had free time.
What did you like the least?
Well, about the basic training?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mind really. The worst part of it, I guess, was just the amount of time that you did, you know, did as part of marching and marching and marching. And I didn't resent or regret any of the other stuff. But I was very fortunate to have a good chief petty officer in charge of us, and he was a level-headed guy. He probably was a counselor or something. Cause he didn't. Some of the guys just hated him. You know, there are a lot of guys that desert. They just go to hell with that. I'm not leaving, you know. And so they. I was just fortunate. I didn't really dislike very much of him. And I'd been in pretty good shape, you know. So I enjoyed the kinds of things that a lot of guys didn't like, was the runs. You know, we'd have to obstacle courses and run. Well, I kind of enjoyed those, but there were a lot of people who were, you know, guys who come in and were in pretty lousy shape, and boy, they hated that part. In fact, I think that was probably some of them why some of them took off. Heck with this and go home.
What was it like meeting people from around the country?
Well, it just seems that it was a congenial kind of thing, because they were also, you know, wanting to meet new people and make some new friends. You lose all your old friends, that's the thing, but you pretty well start out alone. When I went to boot camp, there were five guys from Butte with me, and I only knew one of them. I mean, three of them were older, a lot older than we were. They were, too. Like, when you're 22 or 23 years old, they call you Pop in the Navy, you know. And so when you're 16 or 17, and you know, you don't really associate with them, with the older guy. So I just only had the one, but I enjoyed meeting new guys who were my age and so on like that, and look forward to it. And, well, you really build a new life when you do it. And then they split you up, though. Those guys, they split you up too. when they get assignments, where you go and where you're going next. It's not like the Army group. They take a whole bunch and they put you in, you know, in an Army camp, and you're with the whole outfit. That outfit moves all together. So what guys that you've known, maybe completely different. There was only, I think there was probably only four guys that were in my boot camp that were on my ship. And so you're split often. And I think you're split more, maybe it would split you up more than any of the other, because like Marines, they stay together, Army stay together. Maybe, each time you hit a port, that the requests for so many needs somewhere else, and they'd send guys from there. And you used to pick up new people, and those of us that stayed, you know, like me, I stayed the whole time. I was got there over three years on the same ship. So there were certain guys that were the same as me. We become very good friends, and still are, both of them sort of high.
Did the meeting new people from other places in the country, did that create any tension? And if so, what kind?
They were the same fix you were. I mean, they were happy to have a friend.
Did it change your perceptions, your previous perceptions, the meeting new people? Did that change any of your previous held perceptions or beliefs about other people?
No, I hadn't done a lot of traveling, but I'd been into, you know, following and being in boxing and so on. I used to, every year, went to several tournaments in different places. And when you go to a tournament, even if you're right in the same state, you meet new guys and they're not all the same. The only difference, like they all, you know, having been in Montana, you know, that Butte are supposed to be different kind of people, you know. Their reputation is so slightly different, but they find out that everybody, you know, pretty much the same.
How well do you feel you were mentally prepared after basic training?
Well, after basic training, well, I think I was anxious to get going and get up. Let's go to sea. That's what I signed up for. Let's go to the war and go to sea. Let's go get to the war. And it was a gung ho kind of thing that was, I think, instilled in everybody that in every branch that was, let's go where the action is and things like that. So most of the guys I was with all had that same thing. Used to bitch about having to spend so much time here. God, let's get enlisted to this, let's get going. But looking back, so many of the things that they took us or made us do after basic training, when you got into, well, like having fire control and stuff, and have to go to firefighting school, where they put you into a burning ships and so on, they shove you through a porthole and they tell you to go in and put it out, you know, and stuff like that. Those things you say, what do we need to know this? But later on you understand that it was pretty damn good training.
How well do you feel you were physically prepared?
Well, I was actually in good shape all the time. I'd always trained all my life. You know, I was in athletics all the time. I won a lot of kinds of things, you know, such as, you know, obstacle races and, you know, just running and climbing and stuff like that, because being small, the guys could pull their own weight up, you know. But I felt I was pretty good physically.
Describe some of your training.
Basic training type of thing. Well, as I said, most of it was all marching for a long time. Then when I got to transfer off, when I got to Bremerton, I had to go to, which was getting ready to commission the ship, which was in, had to go to Oregon, luggage that, but some of the things we did there was fire control, firefighting, and also some gunnery, which are on bigger guns that were able to go to, I forget where it was, outside of Washington, over on over close to the Olympic Peninsula somewhere in there, but they had a firefighting school and they also had gunnery schools there. And that's where we would get to, we would train on the guns to, like airplanes pulling sleeves by, and we'd fire at those. And you had to move around in different, every position. You'd be a trainer, you'd be a loader, a trainer, everybody got experience to work on every part of the gun and make it fire and load it and everything else. So. And then we did a little bit more on safety as far as, even in boats, and small boats and rescue and all that kind of stuff. Did lots of swimming. I got into swimming, and then they grade you as a swimmer, whether you're first or second or third class. It's surprising how many guys in the Navy don't know how to swim. But when you could swim, I was put on that was because of my rate too. But I was on a rescue crew, swimming rescue crew, where you'd go out if, like we had, when they bombed when the B-29s went over and bombed Japan. See, they're coming back. We were out waiting for them to come back, but some of them were getting out of fuel and would probably have to crash in the sea. They had it pretty well lined up when you took this particular course, and they had all the ships along one. But we would we'd have our rescue crews on boats ready to go when they go over, in case anyone went down. And they'd go for them, and then they send the guys out. So you tell them where to try to, if they're going to bring the plane in, bring it in close enough so we make sure we get it. So I never had to do it, because the only one I think that one of them crashed but didn't hit the sea. If it tried to go on land, it was too big to get on there. But that was part of your training too, was the swimming and the rescuing, firefighting, gunnery. Then that would be on, that's where they identified you as whether, sort of like a college or a high school, what are you going to major in? So they would be lacking a high school education. You were pretty well assigned to kind of be a gunner's mate or a deckhand. And so I was rated as a coxswain. So I ran a boat and was on the deck crew all the time. And most of the time you do that, because all you do is chip paint. And you run a crew. When I'm a coxswain, I got to be a coxswain, so I was able to run the crew instead of having. I did my share of chipping and painting, but that goes on all the time. That's the only thing that they can keep you busy at. And then you get in port, they put you over side, and you'd have to chip and paint the rust and add barnacles and all that stuff. But that's pretty much all they did, except if you were, like I say, it's sort of like, what was your major you were going to go into? If you're an electrician, you had all got together different thing. If you were signaling, you had another thing, radioman, all different, we're all different. We didn't get to touch another area other than the area we were assigned to, which we would be used as on the ship. So I pretty much got to know some of the signaling, but mostly gunnery and stuff like that. Firefighting, first aid was good.
What were your expectations as you prepared to leave basic training?
I hoped that we'd get hooked up with the fleet. That we'd be able to see IRS choices and not choices, but there were assignments on what I was on was I could have been assigned to just. The ship that I was on could have been just ferrying. We did some of that, but go to ferry duty I didn't like. That was being going into our islands, Guadalcanal and places like that, pick up all the guys that were sick and wounded and that, and have to take them back. If they didn't make a hospital ship, we'd have to take them back to Hawaii or to Honolulu. And I wouldn't want that job all the time, just going out of Pearl Harbor every other week, go to an island and pick up And there are a lot of malaria guys who had malaria and stuff. And we had a, we brought a bunch of them back from Guadalcanal that were all had malaria. And that was all right, but it also, it did two things. It got you ready because everybody thought that they saw, you know, the water, the ocean has a fluorescent in it. When fish, large fish, you'll see this, you know, it's like a, the fluorescent, and you watch, you know, you see it, it shines. And so we all saw torpedoes, and we all saw submarines coming at us. They weren't probably there, but it was all in your imagination because it was your first time into there. So that kind of got you used to being going on this ferrying duty. And the other would be, so that would be one, and what we did is we did a, just ferried about three times, and we were given a squadron, and then we went and joined the fleet. And so that was what I was hoping, where we'd go, is get a squadron aboard, and we'd go on to, onto the hook up with the big carriers and the fleet. So that happened.
How was the American Navy viewed by the other Allied forces you came into contact with?
Well, it was superior to any of them. It, we were more critical of cleanliness was one of the things, and the care that we were. The British, not put them down, but some of their ships are just horrible. They didn't spend time scrubbing decks and doing that like the American Navy did. American Navy, your first thing you learn is that cleanliness is next to godliness. And that was really because it also, you know, made things sterile. So, you were in a sterile environment and you didn't get all the diseases and that. But the British, the guys would say, did you ever get aboard one of those British? And say, yeah, I was aboard one of God. I mean, I don't see how they could stand. But the odors and that, you know. And they didn't spend a lot of time cleaning up. They were sailors, and didn't much about them. You know, your ships, our ships were, you know, spick and span, shine, and even shine in brass and whatever. What are we shining this for, you know? And, but they were, and like I say, my job, having been a deck crew, I used to have to run a crew as far as painting all the time. We paint, you know, when you get through painting, you're like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. By the time you're through, it's time to start all over again, you know. And you just, it's a continuous kind of thing. That kept you, that was the most, you know, the dullest part of the whole service. And you had something to do like that. I guess every other division had some, you know, the dislikes, like gunners might hated to take down, tear down guns and do that. And signalmen hated to do, go through and sew flags and play. Put lanyards up and all this kind of stuff, and a lot of it was, you know, a crappy part of the job. But looking at other navies, that we were superior to any.
How did this affect your perception of the war?
Oh, we didn't bother. We had a lot of respect for them. It didn't make a difference whether they're cleaning. The only thing probably, well, maybe we're picky, you know, or ooh, you know. But as far as fighters, they were great. They were, the British were, they were gutty, I'll tell you. Some of the things they did with their ships, you know, were amazing, where they'd take them, where we wouldn't go that close, you know, stuff. They'd give it a shot, it didn't work, you know, too bad. But they were pretty good fighters. And we didn't operate with anybody. We had just Australian, and they were good also, and they were closer to us as far as our cleanliness, no. But they were good. They were great Navy.
Did you feel your job was more or less dangerous than that of the ground forces, and why?
Well, no. I would say that, no. The part I admire and really respect the ground forces. I mean, when you're in the infantry. Yeah, or, you know, Marines, or watch the Marines, you know. No, their jobs are much, much more dangerous, I'd say, you know, unless, now some of it, I can't, honestly, you know, if you're out and being torpedoes at you, or like, you know, and ours with kamikazes at you, then you're dangerous, just as dangerous, you know, that we used to carry, meet guys on bear parties and so on, when we'd get into an island, they secure the island, and we'd have a party. But you're talking to the ones who were there, and they tell you I'd hate to be on you, but you guys got up. I don't want to sleep in a wet bed, you know. I'd hate to be where you are. I'd say, look, hate to be where you are, you know. But it'd be just as dangerous if we were in combat all the time. And we were on general quarters an awful lot. That means you don't leave your guns or you don't leave your station. And you have a lot of, which we just happened to hit the time on, the Japanese Navy decided all to volunteer for kamikaze. And so we had them, you know, we'd have them for 3 or 4 days at a time, keep coming at you. And then they start diving at you, that was, you know, you couldn't stop them. You'd fire everything you had and at them, and you didn't hit them. But that didn't happen, you know, like, you look at or read anything about invasions of Guadalcanal and those soldiers and that who were in there and for 2 months at a time fighting in the jungle, fighting every day, swamping, going through, you know, jungles and swamps, and snipers all over all the time, and do that for a whole month at a time without a break. And if you did get a break, it was probably only for about 4 or 5 hours until they moved the other Japanese that they brought in to come after you, you know. And those guys, I say, that was hell. And then in Europe, too, even those, all the infantry, which is Marines or soldiers. Now, they had a lot tougher.